Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. Welcome to your Wednesday, March 21st. Thanks for tuning in this morning. Glad to be helping you get your day started. Whatever you got planned today, is it back to work like usual? Or do you have a day off or maybe the morning off? Maybe you're on your way to some appointment you're nervous about. Let us know and we'll pray for you because we care, because we really do. We do go to God in prayer every day, and we want our listeners to know that our desire is to glorify God with what we do here today, and we're also just trying to give you the latest news and information and things that will affect your day as well, and then to look at things through a Christian lens that says we're going to always look to the supremacy of Christ in all news stories and look for redemption. And I was thinking of that Austin Barmer. They finally found him, and he did blow himself up in a car as a 24-year-old kid. And honestly, the whole situation just makes me sad. And I think how terrible this 24-year-old kid with whatever mental illness or tortured mind or loneliness or desperation or whatever he had that made him do what he did. I just feel bad. I feel bad for what he did. And now that he's dead and he's got family that are sad. And yeah, the whole thing is sad. So we just want to start our day with praising God for the day ahead for all of us. In Psalm 89:14, it says, "Righteousness and justice are the foundation of your throne. Love and faithfulness go before you." So that's how we're going to start our day. I have already in studio a special guest. I'm going to bring him on in just a minute. And it's 6 minutes after the hour. When we return, Jason Yates. Good morning. It is morning. I guess it's your job to make it good. I know it's going to be good in this studio this morning. I have Jason Yates in. He is a Carleton College alumni, so he knows Kent Kaiser. So that can't be all good. And his wife, Megan, who he met and married here on the campus at the University of Northwestern. She's an alum. And just a couple of years, he graduated after Kent. And Jason started an organization called My Faith Votes. It's become pretty influential. We're going to talk to him about that. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no. It's nice of you to be here, especially this time of the day. So let's get started by talking about the fact you know Ken Kaiser. So
yeah.
That's one strike against you.
Well, don't hold it against
me. I'm not going to, but Ken's going to be joining us in the next half hour, so we're going to bring him in, let him defend himself. But you started an organization called My Faith Votes. Now, I'm dying to hear what that's all about.
Sure. Well, My Faith Votes I actually didn't found the organization. My uncle did.
Okay. So
my uncle is a literary agent out of Orange County, and he represents a number of very well-known Christian authors. If you walk into any Christian bookstore or even a Barnes & Noble, many of the books on the shelves there,
really? He's been their agent.
He's been their agent.
That's very
so,
cool.
Just a couple, Chuck Swindoll and Beth Moore.
And 0 for 2.
But one of the big names he also represented was Dr. Ben Carson.
I've heard of him.
And Dr. Ben Carson wrote a book called One Nation.
Oh, yeah.
And One Nation talks about how we can return to be a really great nation and what made our country great in the first place. And he spends a chapter in that book talking about our responsibility as citizens and voting. And it's a little bit of a long story. I'll make it real short.
No, I love the long version.
Yeah, yeah. My uncle's daughter-in-law, my cousin's wife, read that book and read that chapter and said, you know, I read that and I became very convicted that I need to vote, and I do vote, but I'm not a very informed voter. I need to be a better and more responsible and informed voter. Can Dr. Carson write a book that would help me understand how to become a more informed voter? And so my uncle happened to be sitting on a bus. It was a bus tour with Dr. Carson. Mm-hmm. He says, let me ask him.
Oh, cool.
And Dr. Carson thought about that for a minute and said, yeah, if someone helped me with a little bit of the research, mm-hmm. I can write that book. And he did. And it's a little book called One Vote. And One Vote, How to Make Your Voice Heard. And so in that, he really helps people and Christians understand how to become informed and how to vote well and faithfully.
Mm-hmm.
In that exercise, in writing that book, my uncle became aware of a statistic, 25 million. There were 25 million Christians in 2012 who were registered to vote who didn't.
Oh.
Who didn't cast a vote. And the difference, you know, the difference in the general election, the mm-hmm. presidential election in 2012, was less than 5 million votes.
So had Christians gone out and voted in that election, Mitt Romney would have been president. Do I have that right?
Assuming they voted in that direction.
Oh, yes,
of course. But it definitely
thoroughly
could have made a significant difference in uh-huh. in that election had Christians voted.
Interesting.
So the question is, why didn't they? And what can we do about this?
Mm-hmm.
And so my uncle, Seeley Yates, said, I can do something. And that's been his mantra. His mantra to Christians in general is, we can all do something.
Mm-hmm.
And so he started looking into this and he said, I can do something. And out of that was birthed My Faith Votes. And I was in a place where I could give leadership to it. And so that was in late 2015. And so we started My Faith Votes. And in the spring of 2016, we got wind that Dr. Ben Carson was going to be stepping out of the presidential race. And so we asked him, would you consider being our honorary national chairman? And he didn't even think about it for a second. He said, absolutely, I will do that. And I'll announce that when I announce I'm stepping out of the presidential election. And so he did. And
wow.
At a CPAC conference, he said, I'm stepping out and I'm going to be the honorary national chairman of My Faith Votes. And that instantly put us on the map.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Nice timing, Dr.
Yeah.
Carson.
Yeah.
that was very helpful. So I'm now interested more in hearing about how My Faith Votes operates,
mm-hmm.
and how you get information out, how we become more informed voters, and the difference that My Faith Votes makes.
You bet.
So pick any and all.
I like to say that we ask people to do three things: think, pray, and vote.
Mm-hmm.
We want people to think well about the issues, to come at them from a biblical worldview and look at the truth that we find in the Bible about the issues that we're facing today. And we do some things to help people in that. We want people to pray, not just pray for our leaders, but to pray for our communities, pray for the people around us that we can make a difference, and to pray for our votes. And then to vote. and we work hard to equip people in the actual mechanics of voting as well. And we've got something we call our personal voting assistant, and it's a tool that helps people with the mechanics of registering to vote and managing that registration, voting, absentee, getting reminders about elections, not just national elections, but local elections, and receiving information about where your polling place. And you can sign up for that. And it's not just for this year, but it's every year.
Mm-hmm. All right, Jason, this is really, really interesting. And I know I'm going to need to go to break here in just a half a minute. So when I come back, I want to ask you about the recent influence. I think you were mentioned, My Faith Votes was mentioned in an article that was quite influential in President Trump's decision to make good on the Jerusalem Embassy Act. Is that a place we can pick up?
Sure, we can do that.
Awesome. Yep. Jason Yates is my in-studio guest, and boy, are we glad to have him in studio. It is 16 minutes after the hour, so we'll just take a very short break and then rejoin the conversation with Jason.
All I want to do is praise your name, from the rising of the sun to the going down of the same. You are my God, and all I want to do is praise your name. I praise your name.
We're back. It's 18 minutes after the hour. I have Jason Yates in studio. We're talking about My Faith Votes. You can go right to the website, myfaithvotes.org, and you can see a banner that says sign up for your personal voting assistant, which is something you're going to want to click on. Yesterday, I signed up for my personal lawn cutting assistant. His name is Dave. He'll be cutting my lawn this summer. I look forward to that. But Jason, let's talk about the influence that My Faith Votes had on President Trump regarding moving the embassy.
Well,
or the Embassy Act.
Yeah, one of the things that we think about is there's elections that happen, mm-hmm. and Christians have influence in elections. But between elections, we can also have influence. And so we give we have tools and give opportunities to our followers to have an influence on key issues, and Jerusalem is one of them. We believe that our concern and care for Israel and the issues that Israel is facing is a biblical concern, mm-hmm. and that that God honors those who care for Israel. And so when we knew that there was consideration, you know, the interesting thing is it was decades ago that Congress approved a law, mm-hmm. that said the Capitol should be moved to Jerusalem, or the embassy, I'm sorry, the embassy, mm-hmm. should be moved to Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. That was passed decades ago.
Wow.
Every single president since then has just kicked it down the road and never taken action on it. So here is a president that has we wanted to bring it to his attention. We asked people to notify him of that concern, and here's a president that has had the bold convictions to be able to do that.
That's fantastic. So let's talk about the other projects and things that My Faith Votes is involved with, because when you think of voting time, well, how often does that happen?
Right.
And you're still continuing to be influential. Now, Ben Carson was the first honorary chairperson of the organization, and now the honorary chairperson is?
Governor Mike Huckabee.
That's another name I know.
Yes.
Yeah, that's cool. So what are some of the daily, monthly activities that My Faith Votes is doing? What are some of the other projects?
Yeah, you know, I mentioned think, pray
and vote.
Vote.
Yes.
And we think about vote as act, really, because, mm-hmm. we're taking action. And that's what our faith compels us to do, is to be involved, to bring our faith into all areas of our lives. And we simply are focusing more on the political realm and asking people to be involved and act on their faith in that way. Some of the things we're doing to help people do that, for instance, you can subscribe to receive an email, a weekly email that we send out called The Intersect. And what we do in that email is we take current events, news stories from the prior week, and we break it down into those three categories. We say, here's how to think about this issue from a biblical worldview. Here's some ways that you can pray about this issue. And here's some ways that you can take action and really act on your faith in regards to this. So that's something we're doing.
Yeah. Well, maybe we can take one of these examples and talk about it, one of these intersect examples. I'm just on the website right now, and it looks like take, for example, the way in which Cecile Richards was honored and the Oscars celebrated her. So there's this think, pray, and act. And the think says, can you help with that? Or should I read some of this?
I don't have it up in front of me right now.
Yeah. It said that the Oscars on Sunday brought in the lowest ratings in the awards show history. Some believe this is because the movies selected for nominations, while others think fewer Americans tuned in because of the political agenda. So you're helping us to think about what's going on. And then to pray is to pray for Christians to be emboldened to defend the sanctity of life, as it says in Psalm 139. Ask God to show you what he might have you do in your community or sphere of influence. And then the act part is Christians must continue to celebrate the work of pregnancy care clinics faithfully, working to serve those in saving lives. So think about the issue. Pray about it, act on it. This is solid stuff. And if I'm getting reminders in my email box every week, I'm liking this.
Yeah, and I think it just helps develop a mindset. If we can model how to do that well for people on a few stories each week, my hope is that we're helping people do that in their own lives about the situations they're engaged in that they know about in their communities, et cetera, that we aren't necessarily writing a story about it, but they're just learning from that model of think, pray, and act.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jason, anything to do as a church, or is this just an individual thing that we need to do?
Well, we don't have anything organized on how churches can do that. However, one of the things that we are doing, especially from a voting perspective, is equipping churches to encourage their congregations to vote. Mm-hmm. And it's from a nonpartisan perspective. Mm-hmm. It is simply the message that our faith does have something essential to contribute to our communities, to our nation, and we need to bring that forward. And so we have a toolkit for churches that provide videos, provide sample announcements, that provide sermon outlines, et cetera, that people can have access to. And, of course, those are used during election period, but it's really a fantastic toolkit that I think is very effective.
I'm wondering how many Christians can explain the biblical reasons why Christians should vote. You know, there you go. You can go to the website and learn about that, can't you?
You can.
Maybe give us a tease.
Yeah.
Give us one of the reasons.
You know, why they should vote. You know, first of all, it's a little bit of what I've alluded to is that our faith is meant to be acted on in all areas of our lives. There's a lot of people who say, you know, oh, politics, that's too ugly. And I don't want to get involved. Well, what you're saying is I don't want to bring my faith into that area of my community, of my nation, or even my life. And so in some respect, if that's my attitude, then I'll say it this way. It's a bit of a self-righteous attitude because I'm not bringing my faith to the issues and I'm not loving others by doing that.
You know, it's interesting because your first chairperson, Dr. Ben Carson, and then Governor Mike Huckabee both live very beautiful lives of public faith. I've watched them and witnessed them and listened to the way they talk, and they don't seem to hold back at all when it comes to sharing their faith publicly.
Right, right. And I really couldn't think of two better people to be involved with My Faith Votes. Dr. Carson, they both just live their faith truly. They truly live their faith. It's not just what they say. And then Governor Huckabee, he was a pastor. Mm-hmm. He was in politics. He was a governor. He ran for president two different times. And now he has a show every Saturday night on TBN, the Mike Huckabee Show, or the Huckabee Show, yeah. I think they call it. And so here's someone who has a platform and can really speak into these issues on our behalf.
Yeah. Now, your uncle, is his first name Seeley?
Seeley, like the mattress, yes.
Like the – yeah, because the first time you said that, I thought, did he say Seeley?
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
Because I'm not sure I've ever heard that name before. Is he still around?
He's in Orange County.
Orange
yes,
County.
And
yeah.
He has a literary agency called Yates & Yates.
Okay, awesome. And what an inspiration and role model he's been, huh?
Yes, an incredible role model to many people, but to me, I've learned so much from him. Just the way he approaches things and his encouragement for My Faith Votes not to be a political organization, mm-hmm. but to be a faith-based ministry and to be equally as concerned about the prayer, the prayer for our country as the votes mm-hmm. for our country.
Yeah, I think you should also join his agency, just so it could be Yates and Yates and Yates.
Yeah, I think so, because I'm currently not. But
I know you should, just to add another name, because Yates and Yates and Yates. I just think that's got a little catchy phrase. All right, Jason, thanks so much. I know you're not going anywhere, because you're going to stick around.
I am.
And your friend Ken Kaiser is in studio next, so we can get this keep this conversation going. We will take a short break. It's 29 minutes after the hour. We'll be back in a minute. Good morning. It's 30 minutes after the hour. Let's see. What's up next? Looks like some news. And then when we return, Jason Yates is still here in the studio, and he'll be joined by Kent Kaiser. So that should be fun. Take a very short break. We'll be back in a minute. Twenty-five minutes till the top of the hour. Many Christians live in a mindset of righteous anger every day. Brant Hansen believes that anger in any form can consume us and says forgiveness is a better way.
It's excruciating sometimes to forgive. And that's what I'm saying is the alternative to holding on to anger is to practice forgiveness. Because you can't do both at the same time. I can't say I'm entitled to anger against you. I'm entitled to it. I should stay angry because it's righteous. I should stay angry about this, and at the same time say, but I forgive you. It's not possible. So I think we avoid the hard work of forgiveness. It also makes us feel better about ourselves, like, well, at least I'm not that bad like these people. Of course, if you've been around Jesus for very long and the things he would say, if it comes to morality, he puts us on the same moral playing field as a murderer or an adulterer. If we've ever thought in terms of hatred or lust, he levels that playing field, but I think we like thinking at some level that at least we're not that bad. Mostly, I think we just think we're entitled to it, and it's easier than forgiving.
If you want to hear that full interview from Brant Hansen, you can go to myfaithradio.com, type in unoffendable or Brant Hansen. That's B-R-A-N-D-T, Brant Hansen. We'll take a short break, and then Ken Kaiser has joined us in studio with Jason Yates. So we will have a lot of fun coming up in just a minute.
How many copies of the Bible do you have in your home? I dare say it's more than just one copy, right? So my next question is, are you reading it? This is Jim Garlow. Many of us have not only more than one copy of the Bible, we have several different translations. But are we reading it? And is God's Word changing us as a result? The Bible is still the number one best-selling book ever, but it may be the least read. We can read, we just don't. And family times around the Bible, prayer, essentially gone in today's culture of soccer and other activities that have replaced it. However, as parents, it still remains our privilege and our responsibility to instill in our children a love for God's Word. This is Jim Garlow. Reestablish your family devotions this week. You will not regret it. Live out your faith as a family. This is Jim Garlow.
We're back. It is 23 minutes until the top of the hour. That music, you know, belongs to Kent Kaiser, his walk-up music, and he is back in the country. He arrived last night from Morocco, and as he was going through Paris and JFK, he was slightly delayed, didn't get into bed last night until 1 a.m., which I think is this morning, and now he's already here in studio. Kent, you are getting the Above and Beyond Award for being here today, so thanks.
Thanks. I'll crash later today.
Yeah. Thanks for bringing in Jason. What a find.
Yeah, well, my pleasure. Found him, I suppose, 30 years ago because we were in college together.
That's a long time.
I know. But I think it was, 10 years after I was out of college when I was working for the Minnesota Family Council that he and his girlfriend showed up for an event that we were putting on. His girlfriend was a Northwestern grad, and just a couple of years ago he called me up and told me he was excited about this organization they were starting.
Mm-hmm. So, and he is excited. And I want to get back to that real quick, Jason. I want to go back to a verse we started with early on in the show, Psalm 89:14, that says, "Righteousness and justice are the foundation of your throne. Love and faithfulness go before you."
Yeah. That's been on my heart a lot for our organization because, you know, there are lots of folks that choose to focus on one of those two. They focus on justice or they focus on righteousness, and they build their politics around one of those concepts. But the verse says the throne of God is built on both righteousness and justice and righteousness. Mm. And, that's something, as we encourage people to think well and to think from a biblical worldview, I think we need to challenge people on both sides of the aisle to think about this, that a party platform is incomplete when set us next to the gospel. And we need to understand that it's both justice and righteousness that we need to be concerned about and loving others.
Mm-hmm. Kent?
Well, I think that's right. I think what he just described is sort of like the partisan divide. I think you see it within faith circles too. I think, you know, there's certain faith communities who come down on the sort of justice side. I think traditionally the Catholics have come down on that side.
Mm-hmm.
And evangelicals have come down on the justice side or are on the other side. Yeah.
Well, yesterday on the program, we had Dr. Everett Piper, and if you missed that interview, I do want you to go listen to that. Go to myfaithradio.com and then check it out because it is fascinating. He's a passionate guy, and he's written an article, "Who Are You to Judge?" And Kent, you've got that on the top of your pile.
Yeah, it's an interesting, very interesting article, I think, because it's talking about a professor who assigned this one classic reading for many years. It's called The Lottery, and it's a short story that was written in 1948. And just in a nutshell, The Lottery is a story about some farmers in America, in the West, and it's a community of about 300 people. The story is about that community. And one of their rituals is that in order to ensure a good harvest, that they get together and they have this little lottery and decide who they are going to kill from their community in a sacrificial killing. And in the story, what happens is this one family is the one that draws the lot that says that somebody from that family will die. And then furthermore, they have a lottery within that family and find that it will be the mother. And once it's determined that it'll be the mother, then her husband, her kids, the whole community all pick up stones and stone her to death. And that's to ensure good harvest. Well, this professor who assigned this for many years, of course, this is a really compelling story about, you know, human nature, about the willingness to blindly follow a ritual and so on. And for many years, the professor got what we might think would be a normal response from students who were abhorred about this. They thought this was a terrible idea for some kind of ritual killing. But in more recent years, like since the 1990s, so I mean, we're talking about, you know, for 20 years now, this professor has seen this shift where at first in the, like the 90s, some of the students were like, oh, that's kind of a neat story. Or they really just thought it was kind of interesting and didn't really take a position. When she pushed students to take a position, the response that she got more recently was, well, if it's part of their religion, who am I to judge? And so she can't even to this nowadays get students to say that a sacrificial killing would be wrong. And these are the same students. She'll say this is the same students who will write passionately about saving the whales and you know, the need to take care of stray dogs and other things, but they won't take a position on human life.
Unbelievable.
I know. No, yeah. And it's like, and unfortunately, I mean, I don't know, you know, she happens to be at a particular university that's, you know, out on one of the coasts, but I'm not so certain that she wouldn't get this kind of a response from students across the country at this point. And I almost wish I were a literature teacher so that I could test it out, but I'm not. But it is shocking.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it's not this particular issue, of course, killing is an extreme. But, I mean, we do see this in the classroom where I often do see students will take a position and where, oh, I don't want to judge. I don't want to – they don't want to offend anyone. And so it gets to the point where you kind of have to wonder, well, where is your own morality, or where – you know, if you aren't willing to stand up for it, then is it a morality at all? And I think that's what this professor has run up against is – you know, this amoral, so in other words, a total lack of morality. It's not that they're immoral. It's not like the students are saying, oh, I want to go out and kill somebody, but they have this lack of morality where they just don't care what happens around them, or, and they're not willing to apply any kind of a standard to other people's behavior because they don't want to judge. They don't want to be mean. They don't want somebody to look down on them for judging, I guess.
Yeah, approval. That's right. Still important, isn't right. it? More so than ever. All right, I'm going to let you two loose on this next subject, and that is regarding the issue of the data that was collected by Facebook for the 2012 campaign. And the way that we're reaching voters was to go and reach out to the Facebook young voters who don't have landlines and say, let us have access to your list of friends. And they summoned about 50 million more voters that way or something like that?
Well, I you know, it's interesting to see how the media have framed this particular event. When Obama was running for president and doing massive amounts of data mining and using this kind of data, it was innovative and new. And it was like, oh, it was the greatest thing in the world for politics. Now that the other side is doing it, because honestly, the Republican Party was behind the curve on this kind of data mining and using data like this. And now that the Republicans are doing it, all of a sudden the media are framing this as a terrible, terrible thing. Personally, I don't know, I've always been sort of a public person, so I have never had any kind of a problem with my data out there. Mm-hmm. If you go to my Facebook page, my cell phone's on there. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Right.
My
right.
address is on there and stuff like that. You know, I've never been one to care too much about privacy issues. But if you do care about that, then you need to get off of Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all the rest of it if you don't want your data to be mined. Otherwise, you can expect that it will be.
Yeah. Well, Kent and Jason, help me out with this. The left is upset because President Trump hired a company to do target advertising, and they are claiming that helped him win. I'm missing something. Isn't that what companies do?
That's what companies do. We live in an information-based world, and big data is there, and it's out there. And so, yes, I agree with Kent, right? If you're concerned about your privacy, about your data, you need to think about that and potentially get off those systems because it is going to be used. But in terms of, you know, a campaign using information to their benefit, to to be able to identify people that are more likely to support them, et cetera. That's what companies do, and that's what consultants mm-hmm. help them do, et cetera. So I think it just needs to be assumed that's the way it's going to be used.
Yeah. And this isn't like something new. I mean, I remember in the pre-internet era, working with nonprofits, you know, we would gather data in a different way, of course, but we could purchase the subscribers to different magazines who if you thought that the magazine kind of aligned with what your nonprofit did, you would go and buy their mailing list.
Yeah, right.
You know, and I mean, so this isn't anything new. I mean, if you know this, who knows who would have thought of this first, but I mean, I suspect it was probably some church that thought of it first.
Right,
like,
right.
Hey, let's get the list of people who think like us and go after them.
Yeah.
I mean, duh.
We'll take a break. We'll come back more with Dr. Kent Kaiser, Jason Yates. It is 13 minutes until the top of the hour. It's 10 minutes till the top of the hour. If you are just joining me, I have in studio Jason Yates from MyFaithVotes.org and Dr. Kent Kaiser, who visits with me regularly on Wednesday. He's just recently back from his trip to Morocco, or so we're told. And I was asking him about, the trip, the food was okay, huh?
Yeah, the food was kind of almost American. It's hard to find authentic Moroccan food that country was a colony of France for us. There were a lot of French restaurants and Spanish restaurants, Italian restaurants, a lot of Europeans there. And it was a good trip. I learned a few things. Like, I was told multiple times that Morocco was the first country to recognize the United States as a country.
Really?
Sort of proud of that, it seemed. And, yeah, I learned a few things about religion there. It seems that about only 2% of the population is Christian. About 4% is Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I suppose the rest basically Muslim.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was kind of a more open Muslim society, I'd say, than some. You know, I mean, when I was in Egypt, that seemed a little bit more closed in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Seemed a lot less conservative there in Morocco. And one of the tour guides told me, also, the farther you get from Mecca, the more watered down the Islam becomes or whatever, and more liberal it becomes. And it did sort of seem that way.
Yeah. All right. Here's an interesting news story. Jim Carrey, the artist, all of a sudden produces an image which clearly looks like Sarah Huckabee Sanders. And then his tweet says, this is the portrait of a so-called Christian whose only purpose in life is to lie to the wicked. Monstros. What do you make of that?
Oh, I don't know. She's great at her job.
She is good, isn't she?
And she's obviously going to be a target. She knows it.
Mm-hmm.
If that's all they got, fine.
She really does do a great job, and she's very good at what she does. And I think you're right that she is going to be a target no matter what. And the press are going to try and make her out to be a demon, and so are obviously people like Jim Carrey.
And you know, there's always this interesting relationship between media people and PR people, and she's a PR person. So, anytime you're a public relations person, you're going to be assailed by the media. They don't trust you. They think you're a liar. They think you exaggerate. I mean, there's a whole list of things why there's tension between the media and PR people. Of course, on the other side, PR people always look at media people and say, well, they always get it wrong. They're not very bright. You know, they're out to get us, you know. So it's always this contentious relationship, but at the same time, they need one another because the media need to write stories or need to air stories on TV, so they need the information. So they need Sarah Huckabee Sanders mm-hmm. to get that information.
Mm-hmm.
But the relationship that we're seeing between her and the media is nothing new. This is what you would expect. I mean, in a textbook, in a public relations textbook, it will talk about this very kind of relationship no matter who you are in public relations and no matter who you're dealing with the media.
Yeah,
there's always that relationship.
Yeah. So Vladimir Putin won in a landslide. Was it due to his excellent campaigning?
was due to keeping out the opposition from the race altogether. It's interesting how elections are run in other countries, but particularly in Russia. He got a huge percentage of the vote, but does it mean anything? He didn't really – his opposition wasn't allowed to run against him.
Mm-hmm. And I think Russell Moore had a good point. He sent out a tweet as well saying, you know, this isn't a good thing for evangelicals in Russia. This is a sad day because they will continue to not be able to express and live out their faith freely.
So, Kent, have you followed any of this story in Texas, in Austin, with this terrorizing that's going on, this what appears to be, well, it feels like domestic terrorism.
Now.
It's done now. The bomber is dead.
I don't know anything more about him.
Yeah,
I
mean, we don't know anything about him either.
He's 24-year-old mm-hmm. guy. You know, I suppose, I mean, I expect what we're going to find out in the upcoming days or weeks is that he was not totally with it mentally and mm-hmm. and so on. It's terribly unfortunate, but you know, it's like you can't live in fear, I suppose, of you know, this kind of thing happening, and yet unfortunately that's what was going on there.
Yeah, well, just a couple of minutes left. Let's go back to your days in college together. You were a couple of years apart.
Well, yeah, I was a senior when Jason was a freshman.
Okay.
He's my senior. Yeah, he's older.
Yep. So you looked up to Kent.
I did.
That was Kent laughing, by the way, not me. And those days at Carleton were good days?
Well, it was. You know, it's interesting to look at, you know, there's an article in the Star Tribune recently here in the Minneapolis Star Tribune talking about how the conservatives at Carleton exist no longer. Mm-hmm. There's no longer a conservative club at Carleton, and it went defunct last year, I think, when the last one of them graduated. And it's unfortunate because over the years it kind of – the interest ebbed and flowed for mm-hmm. sure. But when I was there, from the time I was a freshman, we had like six people in the College Republicans. It was a little support group. By the time I graduated, we had a list of 300 people, and we had 25 people showing up for a weekly meeting. It was the Reagan era.
Yeah, that's
and it was
era.
Really different. And mm-hmm. over the years, I kept in touch with some of the conservatives there, and they brought in great speakers over the years. And so it is sort of unfortunate now to hear that there's really nothing left there in terms of a conservative movement, because I think that Carleton's one of those places where you could bring in conservative speakers, and they'd be respected, and they'd be heard, and you know, I think people were always very respectful and always wanted to hear the opposite view, even if they were a liberal. And mm-hmm. so it's unfortunate they don't actually have that going on right now.
And what do you think of My Faith Votes? Very cool.
It is. I think it's, I've been involved with trying to get Christians to vote for many years. So I'm glad that there's this movement to try and, you know, help. Because oftentimes what's unfortunate is sometimes you hear people say, oh, I don't want to get dirty in politics. And it's not for Christians because, you know, and they give all these reasons. You know, that I think are not legit. And so I'm glad that there's this organization out there to embolden people to be involved.
Well, Kent, thank you so much. And Jason, thank you so much for coming into the studio this morning. It's really been fun having you both here.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, it's 3 minutes till the top of the hour. We'll take a very short break and wrap up hour one. Thank you to just Jason Yates and Dr. Kent Kaiser for making Hour 1 so interesting. We had a great conversation. If you missed it, Jason is leading MyFaithVotes.org. Way to be informed. He says, think, pray, act. Those are good words to have in your brain just about regarding everything. All right, coming up next, Bill Inglis is in studio. Be back in a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.